Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Taylor, his dad called up the stairs. We're going to be late. Get a move on. No answer. Taylor, didn't you hear me? His dad bellowed from the bottom step. The competition starts in an hour and it's 45 minutes away. You've got to move it. No answer. Taylor's dad bounded up the steps to his son's room and found his 15-year-old sitting hunched over his desk in the dark. Hey, buddy, he switched on the light. What's going on? I don't know. Taylor's eyes were vacant. I'm not sure I want to do this. Not sure? Your science project is better than anyone's. It's sure to win big time. Taylor seemed far away. It all seemed so meaningless. It was fun for a while, but now. But, his dad clamped a hand on his shoulder, Mom and I mean everyone will be blown away. You should be proud. Taylor looked spent. Why don't you go? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about gifted teens? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has worked with schools and with gifted teens for many years. Elizabeth V. Lodl serves as a Virginia commissioner on the Education Commission of the States. During Mrs. Lodl's nearly 40-year career in public education, she has served as the principal of Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, as well as three other Northern Virginia schools. Among her many honors, Mrs. Lodl has received the 2005 Virginia Educator of the Year Award from the American Association of University Women, the 1998 Rice University Distinguished Alumni Award, the 1996 McLean Chamber of Commerce President's Award for Service to the Community, and the 1993 Rabbi Richard Sternberger Social Justice Award for Combating Racism, Bigotry, and Prejudice in Northern Virginia. Mrs. Lodl serves on the advisory board of the National Science Resource Center of the Smithsonian Institution and the National Academies. She has two children, Eric, a writer and musician, and Kirsten, co-founder and CEO of the National Student Partnerships. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Mrs. Lodl.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
What would you say is the most common misconception about gifted teens?
I think probably that some people, including their parents and their teachers, forget that they're actually regular kids in a lot of ways. They have many of the same concerns that all teenagers have, and that these are needs that need to be met either at home or at school.
Some examples?
Self-confidence, wanting to be popular and belong to a group, experimenting with risky behavior, and getting into trouble. All of the things that young people tend to do as they're growing up and figuring out where their boundaries are.
As principal of a school that basically encompasses a lot of gifted students, what surprised you most?
Perhaps because I've been in the business for so many years, and during these almost 40 years have dealt with many gifted students, I was actually surprised at how familiar things at Thomas Jefferson High School, which was affectionately known as TJ by the students, seemed. There were definitely differences. It is a research high school. And that was probably my biggest surprise, in that every student at that school is expected by the time they graduate to have a significant scientific or technological research project that is presented as a part of their graduation requirements. And these are pretty impressive moments, as you can imagine. It is a school that also, and it surprised me, publishes a research journal, and for several years won the National Award for Scientific Research Journals, competing against professional journals in the United States.
Oh my. Does this mean that there's a tremendous amount of anxiety among kids who are entering that kind of school setting? It just gives me a stomachache to think about it.
It is overwhelming.
Yes, there is definitely a lot of anxiety on the part of both the students and their parents. Clearly, in some families who have had other children there, I think there's much less anxiety. Of course, being familiar with anything lessens the anxiety. Because of this anxious piece of their education, I think all of the principals who've led this school have tried to give it a very relaxed atmosphere and to do things in terms of the management of the school that lessens anxiety. I had actually done this at the same time when I was principal of McLean High School, of letting students inhabit the hallways of a very traditional building by sitting where they wished to sit in the hallways, and frequently had to climb over legs as I moved around the building, of letting them eat around the building and not being confined to the cafeteria. Small things like that mean a lot in a school for teenagers.
What are some of the common characteristics parents might recognize in gifted teens? What's the difference between a very capable student and a gifted student?
Well, with all categories, I have found that there's a great range of differences from those who are so intellectually curious and endlessly searching for answers to the questions of why or why not, to those who clearly see the big picture and those who see only the minutiae of what is happening in their world, and they're very engaged in that minutiae. In terms of intellectual giftedness and being capable, I think the intellectually gifted child is one who absorbs and reflects on whatever it is they're doing at a pretty high level, and they skip a lot of steps as they do that. Whereas capable young people more often are much more methodical, tend to go through all of the steps very carefully. They persevere and they often make better grades than the highly gifted child who feels like, oh, gee, I don't need to do that piece. I understand it. Let's go to this piece. It's more interesting.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion with Elizabeth Lodl about gifted teens.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Elizabeth Lodl about gifted teenagers. Would you share some examples of these kinds of kids that you've run into over the years?
Well, I could point to students in every level of school that I have run, which has spanned from middle schools through high schools. I can remember a group of young men in the early 70s at Wakefield High School in Arlington. When I was teaching English there in the Art English Music Seminar, we required a project at the end of the course of study of these three subjects, art, English, and music, that incorporated all three. And it was always amazing to me what these gifted young people would come up with, from music composition to one that was recognized in the Washington Post because these three young men made a film called The Refiner's Fire. It was an animated film before we really had that kind of technology, and they set up cameras facing the floor of one of the parents' basement and literally moved all of the pieces as they made this film, which was an award-winning film and is still in the library of many schools because it so well illustrates a number of highly intellectual notions. I remember a young man in the seventh grade whose mother came in and neither of them spoke English. They had just arrived here from Russia. But through sign language and other ways, it became clear to me that he was probably a highly gifted violinist who needed his violin to be protected on the school bus. It took me a while to figure out what the mother's concern was, but it was the ride on the school bus. So again, you know, I arranged for him to ride on the front seat with his violin near the bus driver. And I'll never forget the numbers of students. I also arranged for him to be exempt from a couple of requirements that I thought were less important for him to give him the ability to do some practicing at school, far beyond what we could normally do. And he played for the entire student body. And we had over 1,500 seventh and eighth graders sitting on a gym floor, and you could have heard a pin drop. So you know that these are gifted students. I remember, again, an eighth grader at Langston Hughes who, when we admitted our first blind student, came up with a Braille Rubik's Cube that he had crafted overnight. Now, you know, you don't have to have a huge pen and pencil exam to know that this is a highly gifted individual. Some of the students at Thomas Jefferson in this required senior research project have literally added to the field of study in chemistry, in geosystems. One of our students borrowed a piece of the core that the U.S. Geological Survey uses to do carbon dating. And through a series of experiments as his senior project, he proved that our government's dating system was off at least 10,000, if not more, years. And
maybe they need him at the IRS.
I think what you learn when you're around gifted young people is that there truly isn't a limit to what they can do and aspire to. So the challenge for the parents and the schools is to allow that and be flexible and keep a stimulus going there.
What should parents know about raising a gifted youngster, and how can their families be helpful? It's different to be raising a gifted youngster in your home than to be sending your gifted youngster off to a teacher.
I think that the home is going to be the first place where they experience all those questions about why and why not, challenging what the boundaries are. And of course, this is typical and good and healthy behavior for any young person. But rather than giving out some of the pat answers that we parents too often wish to give out, of encouraging that curiosity and setting them off on little tasks to figure it out. Well, why don't you help me figure this out? All young people, and especially gifted young people, like to be engaged and challenged, and jobs around the house, jobs that aren't necessarily the typical ones of let's clear the table and do your chores. Now, I think that they should not be exempt from that either. But jobs of helping with the grocery list, with the calculations that go into what we're spending on various things. Giftedness really has no boundaries. I think parents of gifted young people, and frankly, all young people, need to pay particular attention to their affect, to how they interact with other people. Some highly gifted individuals, the IQ is high, but the EQ, the emotional quotient, is not particularly high. And we have to help them become sensitive to others, to try to understand the notion of empathy and what it means. I've often thought we need to teach all young people a class called Manners for Minors. I used to terrorize students at TJ. They knew they had overstepped a boundary when I said, I'm sending you to charm school. And I never defined what it was, which was relatively alarming because they could only imagine what this meant, how many hours and days they were going to have to spend in charm school. But fortunately, some of them did figure it out. In fact, many of them, and they by the time they graduated, they had succeeded at charm school as well. I think having young people involved in service projects, and again, you can start this as very young people, and schools certainly add to it, but being curious about the world around them. When you're going somewhere as a parent, taking them along. I can remember my own children being so curious about voting, and I started taking them when they were tiny children into the voting booth with me to understand, and they're very engaged citizens now. And that's really what we want to help our young people be. And let them just find a passion and then be a cheerleader for that passion, whether it's frogs or basketball or the violin. There's so many different ways, and skill in one area is very transferable to skill in the other areas, particularly learning the skills of group work, the skills of focus and concentration.
It's interesting. I think we think as parents, if our child is especially interested in collecting rocks, that we figure that's going to continue to happen because he's so passionate about it. And we don't realize that a couple of years down the road, he may change totally and want to compose music or some other thing.
Exactly. Yes. But one of the saddest things, and I have often asked teenagers this just as I have chatted informally with them, tell me about your interests. What are your passions? And the saddest one is when they can tell me nothing. And then I know that this is a young person who's very susceptible to other kinds of influences. We need to help our children have interests and passions.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion with Elizabeth Lodl about gifted teenagers.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Elizabeth Lodl about gifted teens. You indicated earlier that all children need a lot of the same things that we offer to gifted children. Would you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I do believe that in my heart that all of our young people, with very few exceptions, are gifted in many varied ways. Some of the giftedness will allow them to succeed as a leader. Some of it will allow them to excel intellectually and get into the university and the profession of their choice. Giftedness does come in many different ways, so that we need to structure schools where every classroom and every teacher assumes, whether there is a label on that class or not, that there are gifted young people in here who have yet to be discovered. And I will be the pioneer who discovers them, which means that we need to make all of our classrooms challenging and exciting. And of course, the unsung heroes of all of this and heroines are our teachers. And I always considered that to be the most important thing that I did as a principal, was to select great teachers, because I knew if I had great teachers, I had very few students in trouble, students being sent to the principal for antisocial behavior, because great teachers have a repertoire of things that they can do with young people to get them engaged. I'm a firm believer that we need to do much more interdisciplinary education. Just as giftedness doesn't have boundaries, neither does intellectual knowledge, and we so often like to cubbyhole it. And when you get to the high school level, you'll find frequently that the math teachers don't know the English teachers or the foreign language teachers. Whereas if you have them collaborating on interdisciplinary teams where you can have themes that engage everyone, then the students are highly engaged because their teachers are highly engaged and presenting such a wonderful role model. I think that every classroom should be organized around hands-on learning. The research project that I mentioned that these phenomenal students did, many students could do that kind of work, maybe not at that level. But what it was applying science and technology, taking it from that book learning and classroom learning into the laboratory of the world. And you don't have to have that laboratory confined to a building. You need to have compelling content, and it needs to be organized. I loved what some of the teachers did at Jefferson when they took the required senior government course and created a course that they called Globalization that went through all of the requirements that Virginia has for senior United States government, but also brought in many aspects of comparative government. They worked with the geosystems teachers who seniors were working with at the same time to look at energy, to look at the globe and what was happening, so that when the Far East experienced the tsunami, I felt very comfortable in calling all classes to a halt and asking one of the teachers to take 20 minutes one morning, and we piped it into every classroom about what really happened there and what were the geophysical things that happened to the earth, so that the teachers who got so excited that were hearing this, as well as the students, could be active learners.
This is clearly a challenge to parents, to teachers. But what about the gifted teen himself or herself? What would you say is his or her greatest challenge?
I do think it's some of what I've mentioned before of figuring out how to use your gifts in a really positive way that doesn't put down other young people, and suspending judgment, because giftedness can often go along with highly judgmental personalities. And having the capacity to actually develop the virtue of patience and allow certain others who don't speak as rapidly, perhaps, but whose mind is just as sharp, to be able to convey what they're doing and learn to work collaboratively with other people, there is great power in that and ultimate satisfaction. And taking some time to do some things for fun, getting off the grind, because it does not make you a more interesting person, and it actually doesn't mean that universities are more interested in admitting you. They want to admit interesting people who've taken some time to relax and reflect on life.
That sounds like a wonderful recipe for all of us.
It is, actually.
Mrs. Lodl, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to further pursue some of the issues we've been discussing?
We are so fortunate to have the internet, and on the web, there are so many wonderful resources. If you just put in gifted education, many will pop up. In preparation for today, I did that. And you see the National Association for the Gifted Child pops up with its quarterly magazine, which you can subscribe to. There are institutes out there like the Davidson Institute that are doing incredible things. And then, of course, there is Johns Hopkins, which has been quite a leader in gifted education and identification of gifted young people at very early ages. But don't simply limit yourself to those. There are so many others and many people, I'm sure, in every community. Find some interesting people and talk to them, and they'll give you even more resources. And of course, the libraries are filled with books about gifted young people.
Many of the stories we've heard about accomplished grown-ups are significant in that they had a mentor. They had somebody who was specifically interested in them, whether it was in the field they eventually went into or not, didn't seem to be relevant. But they had somebody who really mentored them and focused on them.
Yes, and that's crucial to every young person in this world, mentoring them. And particularly gifted young people respond wonderfully to mentorship. And schools need to have more and more of those programs. We had an extensive one at Jefferson, where by the senior year, many students left campus 2 days a week to pursue their mentorship undertakings where they worked with scientists or in corporations with people who we felt they could really learn a lot from.
Well, Mrs. Elizabeth Lodl, we have really learned a lot from you. We are so grateful that you took the time to be with us today. So thank you very, very much.
It's been fun for me, a real delight. Thank you for asking.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 374 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.